Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and my co-host is Misty Hall. We're here tonight with the Straight Wives Talk Show, the hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. And each week, my co-host is Misty Hall, and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. So good evening, everyone, from wherever you're listening from or during the week. Thank you for listening to our show, which is really growing in popularity, and we want to thank all our listeners for that. And good evening, Misty. How are you?
I'm good. How are you tonight, Bonnie?
I'm doing good. Just trying to beat the heat, which hasn't been easy.
Oh, my goodness. When you learn how to do it, please let me know. Forward on the information, please.
I know.
It's miserable.
One bad summer everybody is having. It doesn't seem to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think people have to go to Florida to cool off now.
I think you're right.
That's what I'm hearing.
I'm ready to head south. Yeah, it's been awful.
I'm so happy it's dropping to 88 here in Philadelphia tomorrow. That's the lowest temperature I've seen now in about 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that the heat really makes people cranky, starting with me.
It does me, too. It changes my attitude, not for the better.
I know. I was thinking about that today. I was thinking when things are really cold, I still seem pretty happy. When they're hot, I guess maybe it's because you can't catch your breath.
I guess. We've had a lot of high humidity, and it's hot when you go outside at night, and usually it cools down at the night, and it's still hot at night. And, you know,
I know, there's no relief at all.
No relief.
At least, you know, in the past you would get a little relief at night, right?
Exactly.
But now there's none.
Mm-mm. It's just hot. Hot,
so,
hot, hot.
Anyway, Missy, I'm very excited about my new book that just came out. It's really my old book, but it just came out in Spanish this week.
Yeah.
And it's now available on Amazon.com. And this is my book, The Gay Husband Checklist for Women Who Wonder.
Mm-hmm.
And because we've had so many women write to us who are Spanish-speaking asking for a book in their language, I was
Absolutely.
Very blessed in having my friend Frederick Martin Del Campo, who's one of the translators for my author co-op, who was able to do this for me. And, you know, like I say, through my publisher at CCB Publishing, I was able to get this book out in print within, you know, the last few weeks. So it was a labor of love, and especially for Fred Martin Del Campo, who really did a beautiful job at doing the translation. So I'm really excited about that, so that women who, you know, don't speak English will now have a resource to go to also. So just went up on Amazon actually today.
And oh, it went up today, actually. Woohoo.
Yeah.
How
so please excuse my horrible Spanish, in case anybody speaks Spanish who's listening. But it's called La Lista de Control para Esposos Gay para Mujeres que su preguntan. I probably butchered that. But anyway, please get the idea. It's the checklist for women who wonder, is he straight? So hopefully, you know, you can find it on Amazon.com. And we have a special guest with us tonight from a hot part of the world also. We're looking for our friend Wendy. So hold on just 1 second. Hopefully Wendy's with us. Hello? I'm trying to get Wendy on. Wendy, is that you?
It's me.
Hey, Wendy. It's Bonnie and Misty.
Hi. Nice to talk to you again.
Wendy, is it very hot in Texas?
Yes, ma'am. I don't think it's as hot as you guys are, though.
I know. We're looking for vacation places to cool off.
Well,
so
I just came back from Michigan, and it was
hot there, too.
I
heard Michigan is terrible.
It was nothing compared to the East Coast or here, but I was not expecting the humidity that they had up there.
I know. In fact, my friend Doug, who's, you know, our wonderful friend Doug, who does the counseling for gay men. He's our male peer counselor.
Mm-hmm.
He lives in Michigan.
Oh.
And he told me that their electric was off. It was like, you know, he went off to cool off in the pool.
Oh, that's not good. Yeah, they definitely need AC right now.
Yeah, he used a temporary generator, but he said it's just horrible there.
Yeah, they're just not used to it. Yeah.
I'm not used to it.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's gone on and on and on up there.
No, you are used to it. You live in Texas. You know,
and I grew up in D.C. area, too. So, I'm glad here everything is air-conditioned. So, it's doable, and I'll take it compared to having in order to have a nice winter.
Oh, well, thank goodness for that. So, Wendy, we're so happy that you're with us again because I featured you in, my last newsletter.
Yes, I saw that.
And the reason why I did that is because you just seem to know how to hit things on a nail in expressing the way that you feel that so many other women relate to when they're going through this period of turmoil in their lives.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I just kind of get inside my head and just write down what I'm feeling, and I am glad to know that it can help somebody else because I really don't try to aim for trying to reach other people. Right now, it's just my way of coping with it all, but I have found when I was further down the road behind, I was finding people saying things that really helped me feel less alone. I just think that's what it's all about, is realizing that you are not the only one going through this. That's just tremendously supportive. So,
well, that part is true. I mean, it's always good to make connections, which is why we have support chats, and, why it's really important for us women to connect to each other. And, that's all well and good, but the way you articulate things is unlike anyone else I know.
Well, my goodness, thank you.
I mean, you just seem to really express, and, after your last one, where you have your,
the recovery,
list.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And so many women have written to me because I send that out to everyone asking me for information, so it goes out to at least 50 or 60 people a week.
Wow.
And I've had, such wonderful feedback that people can make a connection to what you're feeling, to what they're going through, and they're healing.
Well, that's great. It is so unique. It really is unique. I will say I've had my computer down for about a month, plus I had surgery and been out of town, so I felt kind of out of touch. So yesterday I listened to last week's show with Francine Barbetta just to kind of get back into the thinking of all of that, and that was very helpful. And it is amazing how and you talked about that last week, how unique it is. I have a friend going through a divorce right now with a husband who's bipolar, and we have a lot of similarities, actually, but there's just nothing like what you said, nothing like walking that walk. Nobody else can feel it.
And no, they can't. And they can really be sympathetic to it, and they can try to understand it.
Yeah.
But they just don't feel it the way that we all feel it. That's what our connection is for all the women who go through this.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And by the way, if anybody would like to call and talk to Wendy while she's on with us, I'm going to give you our call-in number, so please get a pencil ready, because Wendy would also welcome your questions, I'm sure.
Oh, yes, yes. And, of course, as you know, I've come up with more things to to the list.
Well, we want to hear them all tonight.
Well, I can't believe I left some of these things out, but...
I'm so happy to hear there's more. We'll do an updated list.
Well,
but anyway, let me just give our number for...
Okay, sure.
It's area code 646-716-4893. I'll repeat it one more time. Area code 646-716-4893. And if you feel funny about calling in and you would just like to email me, you can email me at bonk@aol.com, and I'll be happy to express your questions to Wendy. So, Wendy, let's go back and start with your original list, okay?
Okay.
When you had your original list, it was a healing list. It was the different phases that you went through.
Right.
Over the last few years, correct?
Right.
And
it came from, I just didn't, and it's interesting because last week you were talking about forgiving and forgetting and all that, and I think for me, I didn't want to forget. I didn't want to forget how low I had been, because when you can go back and look at that, you realize how far you've come.
Mm-hmm.
And that momentum keeps me going forward, and I needed to go back And before I forgot how bad it was and what was going on, I needed to write it all down. I don't know why. That just came through me. I don't know exactly why, but and so that's kind of what started it. And there was such a stark difference from the beginning, where all you can do is it's just those short little words of just shock and you know, you just disbelief and just shame. And I don't have the list in front of me, but it was just so stop you in your tracks kind of thing. And then,
right. In fact, one of the expressions that you use that always strikes my mind, because I think about your list often and read it and review it,
mm-hmm.
is like being a deer, you know, in the headlights.
Yes. Yes. I had never heard of such a thing when I discovered this. That I had never dreamed that somebody would do this, and I consider myself having been around. I've lived in all parts of the country, and you know I'm not in a hole in the ground anywhere. And it was just such a shock to me.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, I found your website and found out that you know I wasn't alone, but I still felt so alone because I certainly couldn't. Felt like I couldn't tell anybody, and
mm-hmm.
You know, it just took a long time to sink in, and then eventually, well, my situation was a little bit different because he ended up, after 4 or 5 months, we talked about we were going to do an amicable divorce and all that, he ended up getting himself arrested, and so that put everything into a tailspin, and that accelerated everything, and that's why I quickly went into that next phase where I just was having to take care of everything, and that was a shock for me, too, because I had never dealt with the finances before, trying to...
Well, I'm
going to
go through, if you don't mind, I want to go through your
sure.
recovery
sure.
list first, but
sure. Sure.
Before we go on to your new list,
mm-hmm.
but... I do want to ask you one question since you listened to the show last week.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel, excuse me for asking this question, but how do you feel on the issue of forgiveness?
Oh, see, I even wrote some stuff down after I heard you talking about that. I really like the way Francine Barbetta put it, that you can forgive and not have to say it to their face.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'm reading her book right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we had some parallel things in that, he was a little more abusive than my husband was not abusive to me.
Right.
He never raised his voice. He never criticized me. He never put me down. And so there was nothing really to get mad about with him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that made it easier for me to forgive him.
Mm-hmm.
He had a very troubled childhood, and I think, as I've learned, and you also talked about how we never really understood homosexuality, and now that I'm understanding what he must have gone through, you know, and Francine went through a lot of that, where one minute you hate him and one minute you feel sorry for him, and that going back and forth was so hard, and
mm-hmm.
that's why everything got dragged out, because one minute you're, well, I married him, he's, you know, having trouble, I should be supporting him, and then the next minute, how could he do this to me? So I had always heard people in, you know, before all this happened, I'd heard about people talking about forgiveness and how it's freeing you and all this, and I just was like, come on, no way. And I never was put in a position where I had to forgive somebody.
Uh-huh.
So I never really understood how that could free you and how that could be good for you. And now that I've gone through this, I really do believe that. I really do believe it. It has been the only way that I could get out and move forward to me.
I think forgiveness is definitely a major factor in your own recovery.
Yes.
However, and I say a big however,
mm-hmm.
I do believe that in many cases, and you know, this is just my point of view, it has to be earned. I
yes.
don't think it has to be unconditional forgiveness.
Right.
And I know that for me with my ex-husband, it took me many years so I could
mm-hmm.
forgive him. And yes, I did feel better after I forgave him.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have been able to forgive him if he didn't understand my pain or what he had put me through.
Okay, that's interesting.
Now, once he really understood it, because he did say he was sorry a couple times in between, like to placate me.
Yes.
But I knew he didn't mean it.
Yes.
I mean, he might have felt. Said, I mean, he might have meant I'm sorry, but he didn't really feel what I was feeling.
Oh, of course. Yeah, of course not.
But one day he really did, and you know, I guess it took 10 years. But
okay,
on that day,
I'm still waiting for that.
Well, I waited for it, and I didn't feel in my heart that, you know, I could just forgive someone who didn't deserve the forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that if men come to terms with it and they're truly remorseful,
mm-hmm.
as many of them are,
mm-hmm.
then you can forgive it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's who we are as women. I mean, that's why they pick us to start with as straight wives, because we have that kind of compassion and empathy.
Exactly, yeah. And I think there's a difference between forgiveness and letting them off the hook. You know, that, and I think I have that in there somewhere, one of my stages of recovery, in that part where I'm wrestling with reality, is it, I had such a, and I'm moving on, but I'm still having that struggle of not wanting him, if I am doing fine now, then he's going to feel like he's off the hook. And that really bothered me.
Exactly.
Because, once that happens, then he will never have to be sorry because, well, you're fine now. See, I let you be, you know, and he has never apologized. And that was part of something I had to work out, I think, through therapy, that he is never, never going to understand what he's done to me.
Mm-hmm.
I just, he's not capable. He's so egocentric that, for him to be able to empathize just in everyday life is about impossible. So for him to really understand what I have been through, I have had to accept the fact that that's never going to happen. And maybe that's what's allowed me to be more forgiving, because I've had to say, well, he's just never going to understand. And there's no point in me beating my head against the wall trying to make him understand. So,
but I am all for forgiving yourself.
Yes.
I think that's definitely, and I
feel bad if I have left that out of my recovery map, because that really needs to be in there big time. And I don't know that that's, I think that's kind of a process. I don't remember any one given day where, you know, I had that aha moment, but over time, somehow you come to that point where, well, Francine Barbetta said a really good thing last week about how they triple protect themselves. That really spoke to me, because I was feeling like, wow, how did I miss this? How did I not know? And the fact that she said, you know, they're bending over backwards to make sure you don't know, that made me feel better that, okay, I wasn't stupid that I didn't know.
No, these guys are so good at living their lives, because you have to remember, they do it every day of the week.
Yep.
And they start to believe them after a while.
Yes, definitely.
Which is why so many of them can deny the fact that they're gay, and they can make excuses for it, and in their own hearts really believe they are not gay.
Yes, I agree with that completely.
And women telling me this every day, you know, my husband just refuses to say that he's gay.
Yep.
And I tell them, in his own mind, he's not.
Mm-hmm.
Even
mm-hmm.
though he's having sex with men, he doesn't mm-hmm. feel he's gay because he's married to you.
Mm-hmm.
Because
and
he has a wife.
That compartmentalization stuff, I don't quite understand it. I think it does happen, but since I don't do that, it's hard for me to understand how they do that.
Misty, can you add some input on that part of it?
Wow. Which part, we're talking about a lot here. Which part? Where should
I go? How they compartmentalize. I couldn't do that. I couldn't sleep at night, you know?
Well, I think that falls into the forgiveness, too. You know, I think it all blurs in that area, because I think you just pointed something out, Wendy, that's very important. You know, I am an advocate of forgiveness. However, I put a little bit different twist on it, too, for myself, and I had to forgive my past,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense. I had to forgive myself for putting myself through some of the stuff I put myself through with the ex-husband and things of that nature, and you said something very important, I think. I think many of them do not have the capacity to truly understand what they put the straight wife through.
Yep.
I think that's a very profound statement. With that being said, I think that exemplifies how they compartmentalize.
Okay,
they
I got
just,
you.
You see what I think there's a big connection there. And, you know, that's just my opinion. Because they compartmentalize everything. And I think that's in a terms of, going back to what Bonnie says, many of these men do not identify as being gay.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to find ways to compartmentalize it to justify what they're doing, how they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to Dr. Barbetta, they got to work triple overtime doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it all, it's very interesting. And it's something that hardly anyone can understand unless they're a straight wife.
Mm-hmm.
What you know, the dynamics of these situations. And they do. They completely compartmentalize. I don't know how they do that. I've never been a good one to do that. However, I think I'm quite thankful that I can't do that.
Right, exactly.
So, I think it's easy to do when you're not living your own life.
Right.
And it's going into, when you're not living your truth, it's easy
to do. And I think for my husband, from a very, very early age, from early, he had very demanding parents that were no nonsense, no feelings. This is what you're going to do. This is how you're going to do it. And so he had to repress his whole spirit way back in early childhood. And so, you know, by the time this was probably all coming out at 8, 9, 10 years old, I don't know, he was already a master at hiding things from his parents.
Exactly.
And so when something else comes up that's, quote, bad, you know, that we can't show, then he just put that in another box in there in his mind. And I keep convincing him he needs to get help and deal with all this. But
although I will tell you something else. I don't know if this will shed any light on this for you.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in many conversations I've had with my ex-husband, you know, when he's really honest about the situation, he's not making this stuff up.
Yeah.
But he would say to me, you know, when he was younger, before we got married, he had male experiences, but in his mind, he never for one minute believed he was gay.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. He really, you know, he said, first of all, he didn't have any emotional attachments.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't kissing these guys.
Mm-hmm.
It was strictly a physical reaction to something. And when he married me, he really wanted to have a family. He loved me. The best that he could love me. You know, he didn't try to trick me into anything.
Right, right.
And he really felt that because he was able to perform sex with me, have children with me, maintain a marriage with me, that this made him not gay.
I think that's exactly what happened to me, too. Yep.
And in his mind, you know, I said, but you were having sex with men. He said, it wasn't sex with him. I didn't even look at it as sex.
Wow,
I just looked at it as an encounter.
That's so strange to me. I just... Yeah.
And
it's
I guess
really
some
hard
men
for me to
can't
wrap
come
my
to
head
terms
around.
With it.
Yeah.
You know,
and I think that's a perfect example of how they compartmentalize. That's perfect because they don't see it. And oftentimes, if they see it with or have relations, or let's say not relations, if they have sex with a man, they do not consider it sex. They do not consider it cheating.
Mm-hmm.
So they compartmentalize a lot of those things. It's really interesting how they, it's just the semantics of the wording of how they do that.
Yeah, and I would love to have a conversation with him about that. I don't think it's going to happen, but I'm very curious about all that, how all that.
Oh, well, you're welcome to talk to my ex-husband about it. We'll have a conversation with you. I'd love to talk about these things, so I'll be more than happy to
I think he's back in the closet and shut the door and locked, you know, threw away the key. So,
and a lot of them are. In fact, you know, one of our women wrote to me this week, and I felt really bad for her. Because she said to me, and I've heard this story more times than I can even begin to tell you, that my husband absolutely denies being gay, and if I leave him, he will marry another woman. And that's true. That's why we see multiple marriages with gay men.
Oh, that's crossed my mind, and I'm, you know, I'm just like, man, if that happens, oh, my, I will do everything I can to stop that. But
and we always advise women to do that. Don't let another woman walk into this trap.
Yeah, oh, no, that won't happen. But I think he also used me to get the affection and all that childhood stuff that he didn't get as a child. You know,
because he
wanted me to hold him and hug him and all that. But it wasn't because he was attracted to me. It was me filling his childhood needs
And I think that's such great insight, Wendy, that, you know, we have to look at that these men...
Well, I misinterpreted that, thinking, you know, of course.
You want to.
Yes, yes.
Right. And I think that's a really great point also that we haven't really discussed, that they are looking for that love and affection that was lacking in many of their lives.
Yes.
You know, and they find it with us, and it may not be the sexual nature of what they need. But don't forget, a lot of these guys in their 20s, they can perform sex, and any sex feels okay.
Right.
And it may not be their, you know, sex of choice. But I think they really believe in their minds that if they make love to us the best they can, if they try to love us, then those feelings are going to go away.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't want to be gay either.
Right. And I, and you know this, I recently disclosed all this to my children, and my older children, 20 and 23, and I explained it to them was, I think it's kind of like trying to keep a beach ball under the water. You can only hold it down under that water for so long, and then finally it just has to, you just can't keep it under the water, and it has to pop up. And I said, I think that's what happened with Dad. And, you know, trying to let them know that he really had the best of intentions in the beginning. I really believe that. And he just, as time went on and he became more stressed and everything just kind of deteriorated, he just had to turn to something and to relieve his stress, and he just couldn't repress anymore.
Wendy,
so,
since you brought this up, if you don't mind mentioning this, how did your children take this news? Were they surprised?
They were totally shocked. Totally shocked.
They had no clue
shocked.
At all?
Yeah, and, you know, as you know, I've been trying to find out from various things of, you know, when I should tell them and what I should say, and some people did mention, well, maybe they already know and all that, and when I told them that, they looked at me like, no, we did not. And almost like, why did you have to tell me this? But we had a wonderful conversation, and I think, I hope this helps other people listening, because there's just such, you touched on this last week, there's just such a question about how to handle this. And I was feeling like I was the only one of all of us that hadn't told my kids, and then because of circumstances, you have to tell your kids sometimes. And I went on and on and on for a long time, and he begged me not to tell him, and I just decided that I just couldn't. I had to be honest with my kids.
And
I
tell people how old your kids are.
They're 20 and 23.
Right,
and
so they're old enough to be able to.
So they're old enough,
understand
this. And I just felt like, you know, that they needed to know what the real reason for the divorce was. And I mean, certainly.
And not only that, but let me ask you this. In your marriage, even though, you know, you said you didn't fight much, he wasn't abusive to you.
Right.
But was there a lack of intimacy?
Oh, absolutely.
Affection and passion?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was all attributed to workaholism.
Right.
That's how it manifests.
They need to know that this is not what to model their own relationship.
Exactly. Exactly. And that ate at me and ate at me and ate at me. And that's helped me, you know, I knew that I needed to do it. And finding the pictures on the computer, just that was the nail in the coffin. And really that was kind of a relief for me, because there was no question after that.
Mm-hmm.
But I've heard too that even adult children wonder if their parents will ever get back together again, even though it's, you know, obvious. And this was definitely, they needed to know it's not going to happen. And I think it helped. I was really adamant about them, that this would help them understand what he was like and why he was so driven to try to hide, you know, to feel okay on the outside with his accomplishments and his dedication and being admired by others and all that was his way of coping with the shame that he felt inside. And they had to live that. He's a teacher, and they were in his program. And so they had to live with his demanding ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt that they needed to really understand why he was the way he was. I mean, this is their dad. And
was he controlling?
Very controlling.
Right. And yes. That's one issue that we always bring up, that a lot of these men are very controlling.
Very manipulative.
Because they can't control anything in their own life, so
right.
they try to control all the environment around them.
And very, you know, stretching the truth. And my kids, especially my son, had really learned to see through it all. And had, I would say, lacked some respect for him as a person. Now, he admired his accomplishments, but both of my kids were resentful of his dedication to his work over his family. And I think this sheds a little light on it. Now, my daughter did say, well, you know, that damage has been done, and that's not going to change, which, you know, I appreciated her telling me that, because I think it's not going to go back to roses again. But he is making more of an effort because he has to, because, you know.
Now they can understand a little better.
Right, right.
And they don't have to personalize that it was anything that they did.
Exactly. And it just...
from that point of view, Wendy, that's one of the important reasons that children deserve to know.
Mm-hmm.
Because
Absolutely.
They can't personalize that their fathers aren't being warm and affectionate to them
mm-hmm.
or demanding or controlling of them because it's anything they've done.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I want to
control their own lives.
And, yeah, and now and what I wanted to say before is, you know, I held off talking to the kids, and I'm so glad that I did, because I needed to be okay with all of this before I could have a decent conversation with them and unemotional.
And I strongly advise that. And, you know, I tell that to women, that before you say anything to your children, you have to get past
yes.
your own personal anger. Not to say that you can't be angry, but you can't express that in that conversation.
Right, exactly. And that's how it came out, that I had, you know, respect for him as a person. And the other thing was, they were not worried about me.
Uh-huh.
Because when you think about, oh my gosh, you were married, how did you handle this? How could you have done this, Mom? And, you know, start worrying about me. And I'm at the point now where I have dealt with it. I explained how I coped with it. I felt that's a real good model for them. When you have something you can't deal with, that you need to get help. So I explained how I went into therapy. I explained how I got on this network, and all that as a teaching tool, as a parent to a child. And I think that's why it was so successful, because they appreciated the fact that I respected them enough to know the truth,
uh-huh.
and they also did verbalize something that I know you've said before, and I have this in my recovery map. They appreciated the fact that that I get along okay with him, that we can be in the same room, that we're not throwing daggers at each other, that we can have a civil conversation, we can sit around the table for somebody's birthday or whatever, and they really, really appreciated that. And somebody told me that when I was divorcing, that doesn't know the whole story, but said, who was a child of divorce, who said, the one thing you've got to do is you have got to get along with each other for those kids. And I really took that to heart, and I think that has, obviously they came out and told me that they really appreciated that, that the anxiety of all of this is so, so hard on kids, no matter what the age, because they have nothing to do with it.
And that's why it's just laid
in their lap.
You know, I know when my children were growing up, as much as it hurt me many times, you know, I would bite my tongue until it was like falling
yes.
out of my mouth and getting
yes.
numb already.
Yes.
But I felt that I wanted my children, even though if we couldn't be a family living together, I wanted to give them that sense of family.
Right.
Because children are made up of two parents. And,
right, yes.
You know, they feel that part of them is part of that parent.
Yeah, and that is, and I can kind of rid myself of him, you know, but they can't.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to really, really be careful when I have a child development background also, so I have a big advocate for kids,
mm-hmm.
That we have got to realize that we're modeling all this for these kids, and if we want them to come out happy and healthy, which we all do, that even at this, you know, the age of 18 and or 20 and 23, they're still developing, and they've got to get into relationships of their own. And man, we've got to give them the tools to cope when things go bad. And that was one thing my son said, because of the nature of my husband being a high-profile position and in his work and everybody knowing and all this kind of stuff, he said, well, I know we can't talk about this to our friends. And he realized out of respect for their dad that he couldn't, that they can't be real open at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, I realized that, but that was not enough, and I knew that would be a burden to you, but that was not enough for me to not tell you.
And that leads me to another point that, you know, thanks to you and your ideas, but we are getting together a group of adult children who need support.
I am so glad.
Many times children feel they can't not have anyone who they can talk to understand.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I've heard from, you know, a few people already who want to be
Great.
Part of the support movement that will start in September.
That's
we'll
wonderful.
Start off with a weekly chat. And then, you know, friends can be made that way so they can correspond
mm-hmm.
with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So if anybody listening has adult children or older children in their late teens, early 20s, who would like to participate in something like this, you know, who need the support, because a lot of times we don't realize what our children are thinking and what they're going through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, questioning themselves, questioning their sexuality, questioning, you know, the whole marriage mistake, how about the childhood? You know, there's so many questions they go through.
Mm-hmm.
And even
mm-hmm.
like your children, you know, being, you know, questioning how their father treated them, maybe some of this makes sense now, but they have to untangle a lot.
Yes.
So that's why if anyone out there is listening who has adult children who would like to participate, please write to me at bonk@aol.com. And I'll be happy to hook you up with that also. But, Wendy, I want to go back to your list.
Okay.
And if you don't mind, I just want to go through the recovery map first because it's been
okay.
so helpful to so many people.
Good.
And you had four different phases. Would you say they were about a year apart?
But that first stage of just the shock, I was kind of thrust into the second stage probably earlier than I would have liked, but
well, I'm going to read
yeah.
all, the, if you don't mind, the
sure,
you know, the all the things in the first phase.
Sure.
And you called the first phase shock and awe, also known as the nightmare I can't wake up from. And I think that so many women can relate to that because they keep thinking in those early days, I'm going to wake up and this isn't going to be here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just having a bad nightmare, and I'm going to get out of this.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the feelings you were having during that first phase was shock, betrayal, fear, questioning, no trust, clues missed, clues seen, relief, confusion, fragile, disbelief, shame, anger, despair, weak, blindsided, no dots connect, secrecy, crisis, foolish, inadequate to cope, embarrassment, deer in headlights, can't think beyond the feelings, worry, worry, worry in so many directions, overwhelmed, can't breathe, isolation, so alone.
Mm-hmm.
And here you said for me it was 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
But I think those initial, you know, first 6 months of feeling all those things, you know, why didn't I see this? What didn't I see? What
mm-hmm.
did I miss? How did this happen? You know, and sometimes you feel like you can't breathe.
Mm-hmm.
I used to feel like I had to go to the bathroom and throw up all the time,
mm-hmm.
you know, whenever I would sit and try to image it in those early days.
Yeah, even you're reading them, it's all over the map. You're all over the map just when I hear you read those just now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you feel. You're just all disjointed, you know.
Totally. And then you moved into your second phase,
mm-hmm.
and that's, you know, there you said having to handle everything, overwhelmed in a new way, making choices alone, dealing with the nitty-gritty of separation and filing for divorce,
mm-hmm.
dealing with accounts, paying the bills, dealing with the housing, breaking the news to the kids, dissolving joint accounts, getting utilities in your name, deciding how to wear your rings. I mean, little things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just deciding what to do with your wedding ring.
Yep, I remember that clearly, just. And let me back up a little bit on that,
sure.
telling the news to the kids, I need to clarify, that was just the news of divorce.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the news of divorce at that point.
Deciding
okay,
who should and who should not know, deciding how much to tell, attempts
mm-hmm.
to negotiate, peeling away from him, looking
mm-hmm.
at all your belongings in a new way,
mm-hmm.
and forcing yourself to put one foot in front of the other.
Yep.
Weary of it all, it's just begun, keeping busy as a, not to feel, establishing new routines, taking on more part-time work, facing family and close friends, finding a new normal,
mm-hmm.
being careful about keeping kids protected, watching what you say about him, resentment about everything, looking forward to dread, and that phase took you 1 year.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I think that so many of those, you know, feelings are also expressed so truly. Then you went on to your third phase, and that's when, let's see what we called this phase here.
Wrestling with reality.
Here it is, wrestling with reality, also known as the mountain, is still there to climb.
Mm-hmm.
So there you have having to think, is this all there is? Pressure to be over it by now.
Mm-hmm.
Less family rallying support, ready to go back to handling less, but without him, stuck, no roadmap to follow.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's so important, that there is no roadmap to follow, because even though we're all in the same situation,
mm-hmm.
we all have such different extenuating circumstances,
yep.
and there's no right way for anyone, you know, all people to do this.
Yep.
Uncertainty, which way is forward, anger resurfaces, I don't want this new life. I don't want to see him, to see me dealing. I don't want him to think he's off the hook.
Mm-hmm.
Sadness resurfaces. Maybe there'll never be someone, a partner, wasted time. I have never really been loved. Fear of the unknown. Questions to tell the kids the whole truth or not. Who should be the one to tell?
Mm-hmm.
To tell others of the past, others of the future. What do I say?
Mm-hmm.
Heavier questions that were allowed to be put off earlier. Sell the house and downsize. Change careers to earn more.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the bad stuff has faded. Almost tempted to go back. It would be easier in some ways.
Yes, I know Laura talked about that last week, and I really want people to know that that's normal to feel that way, but keep forging ahead.
Right. So many times we think, you know, is it really worth giving up what I had?
Yes.
Because you really forget what it was,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially after a year or so, you know, and you're dealing with all these new things that you have to finally do on your own.
And I was going into quite a drop financially. That was very scary.
Mm-hmm. It is very scary. But I always tell women that you can always survive, you know, financially, but you can't survive mentally in a horrible marriage.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And you're trying to move forward, but it's so hard sometimes. And that phase took you 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then you went to your last phase, which is acceptance and becoming whole, also known as moving on, not there yet, but to be continued.
Right. I'm getting there.
And that may include acceptance of self, accepting the circumstance, making peace with the past, which is what we're talking about with forgiveness.
Yes.
Of ourselves. New goals, less pain, more joy, commitment, giving back, paying forward, to help and support received along the way, disclosure with nearly adult children, self-sufficiency, the feminine spirit restored or being revived, finding new hobbies and interests and revisiting old ones, feeling whole, lighter steps, looking back with satisfaction, finding a new partner, trusting myself. So these are all things in the phase that you're starting now, right?
Yeah, I feel like I'm getting there. I've had some interesting discussions with family members about you know, the future of marriage and whether I really want to be married and all that kind of thing. And so that's kind of where I am right now. I don't know if it's worth it or not. But I will keep my options open, as my mother always used to say.
You know, just and when the right man comes along, you can always make a decision.
Right.
You know, today
right.
a lot of our women, you know, including me, you know, I would not look to remarry. I'm in a loving, wonderful soulmateship for 16 and a half years.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I like my independence. You know, I love
right.
being with my soulmate, but I also love being, you know, on my own.
Right.
So it worked
right.
for us. But,
right.
you know, we're older. Are you
right.
older?
I'm
no.
older.
Well, might work for you. Misty's younger, so I tell her, go find a husband, Misty.
Well, I saw that. I looked
know.
At I saw your new website today for
Thank
the first
you.
Time.
Thank
and you. I don't know why, but I just pictured you more in my time for my age group, and you're not.
Yeah, when you,
I think this brings us, makes us wiser than we want to be. So maybe I'm wiser in years than I am actually in years, maybe.
Yeah.
We'll think
maybe
of it like
just,
that.
Maybe you just look young on your website, Misty. And everybody can see Misty's beautiful picture at our new website at mistyhall.com, MISTIHALL.com.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that more before the end of the show.
Yeah.
But now, getting to your new list, do you happen to have it with you?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Okay.
It was almost like a zero, you know, my four phases I have on there. And then I thought, you know, where was I before the deer in the headlights? Kind of phase zero before that. And this went on many, many years, many years.
Right, and I want to let for our listeners know who don't get the newsletter or may not have seen it or opened it
mm-hmm.
yet.
Mm-hmm.
What Wendy called this list was before I knew what I thought was a marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, this is before she knew what the news was,
mm-hmm.
and she knew that something wasn't quite right in the marriage, correct?
Correct.
You know, homosexuality was not really what she was thinking along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
But she knew she was feeling certain feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And so the list that you have was from before you knew. And when you say him and me, is this your perception of what it was for him, or do you think?
Well, how I perceived him, what he was like.
Okay.
What
so
he
you,
was like.
Can you
what
go
it was like to live with him.
Okay, so Wendy's going to first go through. Do you think it's better to go through the list of what he felt like and then you, or one for one, or
yeah,
how do you feel?
No, it's not. There's not really a one for one, but. Whatever you want me to do.
All right, well, let's go how you perceive how he felt.
Okay. This
we'll
is
go
this
through the
kind
him
of
first.
The state of the union type of thing for probably 10 years, maybe more. Preferred celibacy, work addiction, long hours, manipulative in conversations, emotionally unavailable, ignored attempts for understanding, defensive about everything. Victim mode, he went into this poor me stage a lot. Withdrawal from family life. He was physical presence without emotional presence with me and with the kids. Demanding but in subtle ways. MIA, missing in action, that's probably more recent.
Uh-huh.
He always had physical ailments, and that's just showing me his coping with all this was becoming unrepressed. Dizzy, headaches, chest pains, hypochondria, just always going to the doctor. Couldn't go to work. He didn't, you know, all that kind of jazz. Anyway, distancing from the kids, narcissism. I read a lot about narcissism back in the day before I knew what was going on.
Uh-huh.
Self-centered, obsessed. With achievement, appearance, and how he is perceived by others.
Uh-huh.
Very nervous about all that.
Uh-huh.
Insecurity, masked by arrogance. I think some of us, a lot of us women can see that.
Uh-huh.
Acted very arrogant. Feigned trustworthiness, made me think I could trust him.
Uh-huh.
Control of the finances. Always a crisis. Drama. He was tense all the time, narrow-minded. And then I put at the bottom, just because I was hearing most people the opposite of this, not ever physically or verbally abusive. It was almost as if he did not want to ever be accused of being responsible for the demise of the marriage. So he was always making sure that he was doing everything right because he didn't want to be accused, me to accuse him of anything that might make me want to leave.
Right. And there are some husbands who are like that. You know, they're not all...
Yeah. Now, I'd like to add one more to that, is he's always acting as if nothing was wrong. If I tried to bring anything up, it was always, you know, everything's fine. What's your problem? You're just,
mm-hmm.
you know, that kind
exactly.
of
stuff. What's your problem?
It drove me insane.
Mm-hmm.
And... So now you want, this is, we may talk about me. This is
right, now let's talk about
the state
how
that
you
I was in for many years. Why doesn't he want me? Low priority. I'm holding it together. Pretending for the kids. Cleaning up the mess of rejection for the kids. Making excuses for him. relentlessly hoping, thinking, willing things to change, searching for ways to fix it, which I didn't know what it was, anxiety about what the kids are feeling, depression, and I went into a major depression, had to quit working, walking through mud, loneliness, lack of conversation, what have I done to deserve this, dread about the future, weary from keeping up appearances, existing instead of living, roommates, embarrassment, bearing expressions of admiration for him by others. That was horrible. They just thought he was just, you know, God's gift to the profession, and, you know, little did they know. Isolation from family and friends and activities, always having to justify his actions for the kids, sad about the lack of reciprocity, angry but sorry for him. That angst is so hard to deal with. I know Francine Barbetta talked about a lot of that in her book. Confused, unhappy holidays. I just dread Christmas. My spirit slipping away. Intense shame that cannot be shared. I think if I had to put an asterisk by any of these, that's one of them. Intense shame that I could not share with anybody.
Did you feel that at some point you were responsible at all? You're talking about the intense shame. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Shame that he did not want me, and that's nothing you can talk about with your friend. I mean, I don't know. I have close friends, but we don't talk about our bedrooms, you know. And once in a while, I would hear comments about friends that would say they couldn't get their husbands off of them, and you know, then there's the reality that I was living, and so you're just like, wow, I must really be, you know, bad.
Right.
Yes. And I surely can't tell this to anybody because nobody else has this situation that I have. And it just kind of feeds on itself, I think. Unable to present a united front as parents. That was very difficult. I had to kind of side with the kids, which I had been taught not to do that, but I couldn't. I had to defend my kids. So, and then this kind of caught me by surprise that I even came up with this. Holding back with the kids to make less contrast between their relationship with mom and their relationship with dad. And I didn't really realize this until afterwards that I was doing that, but I didn't want to get so close with the kids that they would feel like, wow, dad really is not close with us. If this is how close we are with mom, and this is how dad is, dad really must not love us. So I would hold back so that it would be less, there'd be less contrast, which is, I think is very interesting. I didn't know I was doing it at the time, but now that I'm in the situation I'm in now, and we're so much closer, and I don't care now. So I don't care what their relationship is with their dad. So I can.
But you were living so much of your life based around him and his reactions.
Yes, exactly.
Rather than
exactly.
For yourself.
Exactly.
And I think what I loved about this list, although I did love your other list too, but for me, where this is so helpful, it's like when women come to me, and of course now I'm sending everybody your list, and they say to me, well, I have no proof. I don't know that this is the problem. And I said, read these feelings, you know, from Wendy and see if you can relate to them. And because every woman who comes to me, and, you know, there's 40 or 50 every week, new women who, you know, come to me for help, you know, I would say about 70 to 80% of them don't have any proof yet. And even if they have some little proof, for instance, you know, these husbands are so good at, you know, manipulating the situation by saying things such as, okay, well, I tried it once, I was in an awkward moment, I wasn't sure, you know, but that's not who I am, and they want to hang on to that belief, and it works temporarily, but as the days and weeks and months go on, you're back to where you started. And I tell them, read the emotions here, read what, you know, Wendy was feeling, and if you can relate to this, then you have to understand this is what situation you're in.
that's good, because if the sooner you can figure it out, the sooner you can move forward. And that's why I was just searching. I had no clue that this ever existed. So I will say, when I came across a book about workaholism, I really jumped on that. I'm like, okay, this is why it's not working. And I got real into this book on workaholism, and at least it got me off the hook somewhat. I felt like I wasn't responsible. And he even read the book. Now I'm thinking about it. Here, read this book. This is what's going on. This is what's wrong. And you know what? He was real, real willing to read that book.
He was probably real happy with that.
Yeah,
book.
He was real happy because he thought I had found the reason. And I even wanted to go on Oprah and talk about workaholism, because I finally felt like I'd had my aha moment of that this was the demise of my marriage. And boy, was I wrong, you know?
Now, in retrospect, you know, when you've confronted him and he just will not come out with this as the truth?
He will not. He still won't. I mean, had he not been caught, it would not, you know. Thank goodness I caught it, because he would never.
Right, but when you caught him, like, what's his explanation?
He hem-hawed around a lot, and he tried to put it off on my son being the one on the computer.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to get it timed so that my son had not been on the computer for that 24-hour
mm-hmm.
period. But I had to keep pressing. I had to keep pressing. And he kept saying, I understand. And finally he had to go off somewhere and write me a letter, and that's when he said he was bisexual. And it was just like amazing, just like you say. It was exactly textbook case of what you have said so many men say.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't buy that for a minute, because if he had been bisexual, he would have been interested in me, and he wasn't.
Uh-huh.
So I think that is so true what you say about how they use that to justify, to make them feel less guilt that what they did was not such a bad thing in the first place.
Uh-huh. And I think, once again, this is their way of justification.
Yes.
And
yes.
not taking responsibility
yes.
for what they're doing. And a way to say to you, well,
yeah.
you know, it's not that I'm gay. I just have this need or these
yeah.
feelings.
And I, you know, that was another reason why I needed to talk to the kids, even though he didn't want me to talk to the kids, because I was afraid he was going to change the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
I was afraid he was going to go back and say, oh, no, that's not the case, da-da-da. And I was like, no, I'm getting the kids first.
Mm-hmm.
And I made sure that I told them he confirmed all this with me. He agreed that this was the case.
Uh-huh.
And then I said, now he's probably changed his mind, but you need to understand that he did admit it to me.
Uh-huh.
So,
how did your children feel when you told them, other than shocked?
They were very quiet. I mean, they were very intent, staring at me, and I just kind of had to keep babbling on and on and on. And we have not really spoken about it since.
Uh-huh.
I did have to explain to my son, who's living with me this summer, that I was going to do this tonight.
Uh-huh.
And I did give him some back. At the time, I did not tell them about all the involvement I'd had with the. You know, with things being put in the newsletter and all that, I just couldn't put too much on them.
Right.
So tonight yesterday I explained that to him, and that it had been a big support, and I had written some things, and you had found them helpful, and so I just feel really compelled to take a bad thing and make it into something good, and so I'm doing this, and so I'm going to be talking on this radio blog, and, you know, if you want to be here, fine. If you don't, that's fine, too. And then that was kind of the end of it. So I hope down the road there will be more conversation, but I have to understand that I've had 3 years to come to grips with all this, and they've had about 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So it is going to take them time, and I'm going to have to be very careful about that, but I hope that we can have open conversations. But I think they're just still just, I think they have no clue that this really does happen, even though I told them. I read your newsletter, and I really got to really see that this really is a reality, and I think for them it's still kind of out there. So if they could find other kids in the same situation, boy, that would be fabulous.
Yes, well, I've already found a few, and like
fabulous.
I say, it would be.
Fabulous, because I think they still need time to process it all.
And that's why I say if other parents are listening who have adult children who would like to participate, so please let me know, because I feel there's really no resources for kids going through this.
No.
And they have so many questions themselves, and they don't know who to talk to about it.
Mm-hmm. And I think being anonymous really helps, that they can feel like they can say things and not worry about anybody, you know, judging them or seeing them or having to have the conversation with them or anything. They can just
right. And I think that part of it, that's why I think, you know, any kind of support chats like that are really
mm-hmm.
good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I think also there have been some kids who have been going through this for years instead of
mm-hmm.
months or weeks.
Yes.
And to see the different phases they've had to go through in learning to accept their fathers.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think a lot of it also depends on the father himself.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have met some wonderful, wonderful gay fathers.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot, but some,
right.
who are the most devoted to their children. And once this news comes out and the children can filter it, the relationship stays strong because it was strong to start with. But when it wasn't strong to start with and this news comes out, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to get stronger. But I think that, you know, at least they have to be able to discuss it and how it has affected them. Or maybe when they look back over time, you know, they look at incidents that maybe now this will explain it, you know, where they couldn't quite put their finger on it like we couldn't put our finger on it. You know, they didn't know why their fathers were acting this way. So I still feel that it's important for kids, especially when by the time they become adults, I think you did a great thing in telling them they needed to know. And they needed to know what the problems in your marriage were so they can avoid that themselves in the future. Don't you feel that's the case? Hello?
Uh-oh, we must have lost her.
Oh. Wendy disappeared.
She disappeared. But I will agree with you. I'm listening to your comment. I have to completely agree. It's like, you know, you and I say in the support chat, you know, you teach your children about relationships, whether it's good things or bad things. You teach your children.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so important, you know, how are you living? Are you unhappy? Are you going? And Wendy, this list she has put together, I'm looking at, you know, both lists right now. It's just
I'm trying to say, Wendy,
amazing.
Are you back with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, we lost you for a moment.
Yes, it cut off. Sorry.
That's okay. So, yeah, we were just talking about how wonderful your list is. But go ahead, Misty. You were commenting on that.
Yeah, I just want to say if there's people listening that doesn't have a copy of this, this is the best list I've ever seen put into words, and it really just describes everything that most women that I work with, including myself, my past, it really puts words to how you feel, what you're going through, and this is the best thing in the world to look at so you can reestablish a sense of normalcy for yourself and realize you're not crazy. You're not feeling these things for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, get this list, look at it, go through it, you know, see if this is what's going on in your life, and then go from there.
Right. And in fact, I even mentioned in a newsletter that, you know, maybe you have other things on your list. It doesn't have to be exactly the same.
Right.
You
know. That's what I would hope it would inspire somebody to sit down, because it really doesn't take that long to do that, to just jot those things down, and it's very helpful.
Do you feel it's therapeutic in a lot of ways, Wendy?
Yeah, and what I find I do is I write it all down and then I just kind of put it away. And then I come back later and go, wow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you kind of get in a zone where you're just kind of venting sort of and just those little bitty phrases, you know, and just let it just kind of stream of consciousness, I guess is what they say. And then after you're done doing all that, you kind of are a little bit exhausted. So I just kind of put it away. And then I come back later and go, wow, you know, this makes a lot of sense.
Wendy,
so
are you
I kind
a writer?
Of surprised myself.
Are you a writer, Wendy?
Well, not professionally, no. My mother was. None of us had been professional writers, no. But I do enjoy writing, and I'm really looking at the possibility of putting this all into a book.
I think you definitely should. I mean, I think
I'm a little scared about that task, but I've had a lot of people who I've shared bits and pieces with who know my story, and they're just like, man, you need to put this down. And as you know, my first thought was, well, who wants to read about me, you know? But
oh, I do.
I'm reading Francine's book right now, and wow, you know, my heart goes out to her, what she put up with for so long. My goodness. And,
you know,
and
I think
every story that's told
is so important. You know,
yeah, it's interesting what's similar and what's not, you know?
Right, and even though some circumstances may be different, some reactions may be different,
mm-hmm.
the bottom line is that we're all in the same boat together.
Yeah.
And if somebody doesn't agree, you know, you can learn from every book. There's, you know,
mm-hmm.
a number of books that are out there now.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you don't agree with all of them, at least you learn from some of them.
Yeah, and I just would like to give hope to people because I, you know, sitting here, what, 3 years ago,
mm-hmm.
I would have never dreamed that I would be in the place where I am now. I'm telling you, I was so scared. I was so scared, not only financially, but emotionally, and it just kind of threw, it really, I mean, I really don't want to say it was a blessing, but it got me into therapy. It got me to realize how strong I really am, and I never would have dreamed I would be at this point now. And
mm-hmm.
how much better of a parent I am now. I can't tell you that, how much better of a parent I am, because my kids are inspired by my strengths. And I did not, I could handle them when they were little and taking care of the preschoolers and all that because that was what I was trained in. But
mm-hmm.
when they got to be teenagers and they're getting into their own crises and their own relationships, it was kind of scary for me. And I was kind of self-conscious about even broaching certain issues, and through all this, there's nothing I can't talk about now and feel confident about. And I'm telling you, my family has said this too. They just cannot get over how far I have come. And so if I can convince one person to fight the fight, I mean, it was not fun what I went through, but it is so worth it. And I don't even have a man in my life, and I can say I've come far. So,
well,
I'm happy. I'm happy just with me. And I could not have said that about myself ever in my life until now. So,
Wendy, I think one of the things I like to impress on women, and maybe you could just talk a little bit about this,
okay,
is that when you're living in a suppressed marriage or a fake
mm-hmm.
marriage or a
mm-hmm.
combination of both,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't have to be abusive. Like, Misty was in a very physically and emotionally abusive marriage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our marriages run the gamut from,
right.
you know, supportive to, you know, just existing like you
yes.
were
yes.
to abusive. But, you know, let's say that in the middle ground there,
mm-hmm.
even though your husband wasn't abusive to you,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the same kind of way that Misty's was.
Right.
But didn't you feel like you lost yourself in that marriage?
Yes, absolutely.
Because you could never make your husband happy?
Absolutely. And, you know, I didn't marry till I was 27.
Mm-hmm.
And the time up until then, I just felt like I was nothing unless I found a man. You know, I was depressed because I hadn't found one. And, you know, I was very quiet and shy and all that. And so I was just kind of put my life on hold until I found a man, and then I would be happy.
Uh-huh.
And, boy, didn't happen.
What kind of relationship did you have before you got married?
It was okay, and it was slow, but that was okay. I forget who was talking about, I think Barbara, again, was talking about how she liked the fact that he didn't like sports, and I said the same thing. I was very, very shy, did none of the social life in high school.
Uh-huh.
And therefore low self-esteem. And even when I moved down to Texas to teach and be on my own, I never really decorated my apartment. I didn't buy much furniture because I was waiting for Prince Charming to come, you know, sweep me off my feet.
Uh-huh.
And I quickly learned after I was married that that wasn't going to happen. And it just kind of prolonged all the low self-esteem that I had already had.
Were you going with each other for a while? Or?
No, we dated, let's see, from January to November because we were older. He was 30, I was 27. Biological clock is ticking. We were engaged by November of that year. So, and then we were married by March. So it was not very long. And in retrospect, I think had it gone longer, I might have done things differently. Because there were even
and maybe
things,
not, you know.
Maybe not, right.
Sometimes
but he was
our need also to feel wanted and loved, even
yes.
though it's not exactly what we thought it was going to be.
Yes.
But we keep hoping it's going to get better.
Right.
And that, you know, if we show them how much we love them, then they're going to really love us just as much.
Yeah, right.
And so I think we hang on to that hope for
mm-hmm.
far too long.
Right.
And when things don't work out that way, I think we internalize it that we just weren't good enough to make them love us enough.
Right.
And this is why
right.
we're having problems.
And it just reinforces everything that you felt, you know, before that, so.
Yeah, because I know that, you know, even though my marriage was certainly shorter than many,
mm-hmm.
I know that I really lost myself in that marriage by becoming mm-hmm. someone who I didn't recognize anymore.
Right.
Just because,
right.
you know, I felt inadequate. I felt that I wasn't able to make my husband happy, that, you know, he wasn't happy. And, you know, I felt responsible for it.
Yeah, and you just pretzel yourself into every kind of position that you can to try to figure out how to make it better.
Exactly.
And you
so
just
I think
make
we spend
yourself
so much
crazy.
Time trying to be somebody who we're not.
Yes.
Because obviously who we are, you know, is not working for them.
Right.
So we become who we think they want, and then we don't
right.
even know who we are anymore.
Right. So, yeah, so, and I, you know, I was married 23 years, so.
Which is a lifetime.
That's a long time, yeah.
A very long
yeah,
time.
Yeah, that was about half my life, so, yeah.
So now that you've restarted over.
Yep.
And you've learned to start repairing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where you can actually say you are happy, right?
Yes, yes.
And I think that's what we want to emphasize also, because when Misty and I first meet women, they feel they'll never be happy again.
Mm-hmm.
They can never get past this.
Or they want to go back because they're scared about going forward. Because at least the back part you know.
Exactly.
And the future you don't know. So it's very, very tempting to want to go back. And
mm-hmm.
I implore these women to move forward because... It's just so much better. I mean, it's just so much better.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of, what's the word, oxymoron kind of thing, that why would it be better for you to be alone, you know? But
well, because,
it is.
Because we say you can live with somebody and still feel more alone than when you're by yourself.
Exactly.
You know, I know how so many of these women who don't have the kind of relationships that they're looking for, you know, you feel very lonely because
mm-hmm.
you're not living with somebody who wants to be with you.
Right, and it's, you know, you have a feeling of how it's supposed to be, and it's not, and that contrast or whatever is just, it's just so destructive. It's just so destructive.
And I think that one of our women made a really good point, you know, a while ago, that she would watch movies and see how people who are in love are supposed to be, and she never
mm-hmm.
felt any of that
mm-hmm.
or had any
yep.
of that. And she couldn't understand, why are they making movies like this? This is not what our lives are about.
Uh-huh.
And I'm saying that they should be like that. I mean,
mm-hmm.
when people are in love, this is how they act.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, and I remember hearing at one low point, I don't remember when, but there was something on the radio station, some church had some blurb of the day on the radio, and they would always sign off, life is supposed to be good. And I remember hearing that every day, and I just kept thinking, well, I don't know about that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, it's sure not good for me, but I don't know what I'm doing wrong, you know? And it was real hard for me to believe that. But now that I've gone through all this, I do believe that, and I feel really strongly about helping people get there.
Now, did your religious background have anything to do with your feelings through the marriage? Or a thing in it, or
not a real strong religious background. That was one thing we really agreed. Both of us agreed on it. I mean, we were both in the same religion, and that was, you know, I see on paper he looked real good. We were the same religion, same this, same that, and so I kind of turned away from my religion because it wasn't working. It wasn't making it any better. So I kind of turned away, and I as much as I kept hoping and praying things would change, they wouldn't, and now I know why they couldn't. But it did make it hard for me to admit that I was going to break a marriage vow. That was very difficult for me to really come to grips with doing that. Before I knew, I contemplated it, and I'm like, well, it's for better or for worse. This is a serious vow. I believe in marriage. I committed. I can't do that. I don't really have a justification for not being married. So, it was very difficult for me to contemplate that.
A lot of women say the same thing, is that, what can they say about not being married? They took this vow and this commitment, and they don't have proof yet. So they say, how can you just leave somebody because you're not happy? I said, because people do it all the time. I look at straight marriages that fail, and that's straight marriages, and that's like 50%.
Right.
And people don't think twice. They move on.
Right.
They realize they made a mistake. They're not happy. And it's time to start over. But in these marriages, I think because it just beats out who we are, that we're no longer ourselves, that we just feel that we can't, I think we lose a lot of the confidence that we had originally.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Do you find
yourself... And that trickles down to the kids. The kids sense that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that played a big part of it, too, is I was constantly worrying about the kids. And what my choices, how my choices were going to affect the kids. I was afraid of splitting because I knew that we'd have a joint custody and he wouldn't hold up his end of the bargain and the kids would be left. And I did not want my kids going through that. So.
Now, did you have a hard time with the breakup? Was he reluctant to go?
He hung around a long time because of financial reasons, and he was in hot water legally, and he was on a leave of absence with work. So my lawyer advised that we just hang in the same household just for financial reasons, and that got real old after about a year. But finally, I had to insist on him getting out. I had to put my foot down, and that was rough, but. When the real day comes and the reality hits, it's hard, and that's hard on the kids, too. But, we got past that, and I just felt like a huge burden was off of me when I could finally breathe again.
Now, what about the children? What did you tell them?
About?
Why you were splitting up.
Fortunately, I told him that we were doing that. I was advised to kind of plant the seeds of it by my therapist before we were going to do it so they could get used to the idea. So I had to be the one, of course. He wouldn't do it. I had to be the one, and I just told them that, and they knew. I mean, there were all kinds of signs that we were not a married couple. But I had to just say that it's in the best interest of everybody that, I think that's what we're going to do, and I empathized as much as I could. I let them know that I did not know how it felt for them because I was not a child of divorce, so I couldn't pretend to say I know how you feel because I don't. And
did they seem upset at the time?
They weren't surprised.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't surprised. My younger child was more concerned about who's going to live where and that kind of stuff. They knew it was not a good marriage. There was always tension. And my daughter did mention that to me when we had our big talk a couple weeks ago, that she knew there was so much less tension now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they know now that it was the right thing to do.
Right. So, and that's what we tell women, you know, children don't like living in that kind of tension either.
Yeah, and, you know, I will say this is, I'm not, you know, I don't hang on every word that Dr. Phil says, but he did say it's better to be from a broken home than in a broken home.
And
I
agree with
had
that
to keep 100%. Telling me that. Excuse me?
I agree 100% with that.
Yeah, I mean, I had to keep telling myself that. And I really agree. And initially when this happened, I wrote letters to my kids, both my kids. I wrote letters and just had to tell them that you have to trust me that I'm doing the best thing for everybody in the family. And, you know, I can't explain everything to you now, but you're just going to have to trust me that I am doing what's best for everybody. And I don't know if I think that helped. They never really said anything, but I wanted to put it in writing so that they could read that again and again and again and again. When I wasn't around, when they were sad or whatever, I wanted them to have something they could hold on to that they could read over and over to know how I felt and that, you know, I really was trying to work in their best interest. Because it was not an easy thing to talk about. I mean, it's very devastating.
It is, for sure. So, now, do you have any new lists that you're planning? That we can look forward to?
No. If you have any ideas on, you know, what ideally was, I'm thinking about all this, boy, I would love to share this map with my daughter and have her have her own. I think that would be so cool if she could do that. But I got to time it right.
Mm-hmm.
But if I could get her to come up with, you know, a similar thing of how she reacted and how she's working through all this, I think that would be really helpful. I don't know though whether she doesn't have to work through it like I did. I mean, she can just kind of put it over on the side and she doesn't have to get out of a marriage.
Right. It's still her father regardless.
Right.
Of, you know, anything.
But I'm hoping down the road that we can maybe collaborate on something and you know, put something out there. But I am thinking about a book.
Yeah, Wendy,
I'm not
I want to
sure.
encourage you in every way to do that. And I'll be
I'm not quite sure what format, you know, how far back you've got to go, because, you know, your whole life builds on itself. And I got myself into the situation because of my past.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to just kind of do a whole chronological thing, I don't know. And it was pretty devastating, all the going through the arrest and all of that stuff thrown into it all, too. That was terrifying. But,
yes, and you're certainly not the only one of our support network members who have gone through the arrest situation.
Yeah, I was...
And everyone who goes through it is so devastating.
Yeah, that was just a whole nother layer that I was, whew, just a whole nother layer of shame and, you know, just all kinds of things that you just, and you have to deal with your kids with, so...
Maybe that could be a list.
Well, you know, I do think I will say something that I did think of that would be helpful too would be just how to cope with the whole divorce process, because that was very new to me. I had no clue how to do that, and there's not a whole lot of people you talk about that with. So, although every state is a little different on how that's handled.
That is so true, and we discuss that every week in our support chat room because women are there from all different states.
Yeah,
and it's
all
amazing
a little different.
To me, amazing
mm-hmm.
that, you know, there should be one law,
mm-hmm.
and instead of every state being so different.
And, yeah, the whole process of, so you have to live separate for so long and all that kind of stuff, Texas is pretty easy on that, all that, how that works. It's no fault and all that, but.
Yeah, and that's one of the new things I'm going to be pushing for this year. One of my new incentives is for your fault divorce.
Ah!
Yep, I'm in the middle of developing a website for that called yourfault.com.
Ah.
Because I really do believe that it's very unfair to put the burden of the expenses of the divorce
mm-hmm.
on a woman
mm-hmm.
where they say that, you know, in every marriage it takes two to tango, but not in mm-hmm. these marriages. It only takes one.
That's exactly right. That would be a very interesting thing to explore, because you're right, it is different. And
I don't know why women should have to be penalized. You know, it's not that we did anything wrong in the marriage.
Exactly. And I've had to keep telling
gay.
Myself, right, that it's not, none of it was my fault, and it took a long time for me to really believe that.
But then, you know, you still have to end up paying a lot of money or giving up a lot of what you have when it has nothing to do with you. I mean, it's not your fault. It's their fault. So, I wouldn't feel this way if the husbands would recognize that and say, you know what, I married her in good faith, and I just couldn't, you know, go, you know, continue that. So let me do the right thing. Let me pay for the divorce. Let me, you know, give support to whatever I have to financially to be responsible. I would feel so much differently than I feel now, but I don't see that happening.
Yes, and I remember with all the financial stuff. I'm somewhere I read, or you know, he should be bending over backwards for me. And you know, his mother just died, so he's inherited a lot of money and complaining about how he's got to pay taxes. You know, and I'm just kind of like, don't even start with me on that. Because, boy, I'm financially devastated compared to how he is. And I had to get past that resentment. I had to get past that. But, yeah, it's just, it's so unfair. It's so unfair how we end up.
Exactly. And, so that's why.
You know, and also, well, they realize, you know, I could have shouted all this from the rooftops. I could have blasted him, you know, all over the place and in so many ways. And, you know, of course I didn't, because, first of all, I'm just not that kind of person. And second of all, I'm a model for my children. But, you know, if he would just acknowledge the fact that, you know, I really appreciate how you handled all this, but
I wouldn't be waiting to hear that.
No.
I don't think he'll ever quite get it.
No.
But then again, you don't have to really, really forgive him. You can, like I say, I'd rather people forget than forgive. I'm a very big believer.
We'll be debating that till the end of time.
Never forgive, just forget. You know, it's easier, I think.
You want to forget some of it, but I don't want to forget from whence I've come. You know,
If I had to pick one or the other, I'd probably pick forgetting.
Yeah, I know.
But I mean, they can earn the forgiveness, and who knows, maybe one day he'll have that aha moment of, let me call up Wendy and say, I was a jerk.
Yeah, boy, wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah,
well I don't know. Don't wait to
write your book on that one, Wendy. Just start writing now. I mean, I think it'll be a wonderful story, the way that you can connect to women. I strongly encourage you.
Well, I hope so. You give me a lot of encouragement. And
I'll help you in any way that I can.
I really appreciate anything I can do to help others in the situation. You know,
you've just been a wonderful guest, and we thank you so much for coming and sharing with us.
Well, you're very welcome.
And don't worry, we'll be asking you again in a couple of months to come back.
Alrighty.
Because you really hit home for so many women.
Well, I'm so glad.
All right. Well, have a better summer.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And we'll be talking
Keep
to
cool.
you soon. All right, love you, Wendy.
Uh-huh.
Take care.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Well, Misty, wasn't that wonderful?
Yeah, she always puts it in great words, so I'm looking forward to that book. She needs to get busy.
Absolutely.
She needs to get that essay for our women, but she has a very good way with words, and
I love
the short
that
phrases.
Woman, she just moves me. I mean, I can just feel her pain and
relate
so much to my own pain that I went through at that time, and so much of the pain that our women are going through. So if any of you would like a copy of Wendy's list because you're not getting my newsletter, please feel free to write to me at bondk@aol.com. And before we say goodnight, I do want to mention to everyone, if you could please go to Misty's new website at mistyhall.com, MISTIHALL.com. And it's a beautiful new website that Misty has where you can find out a lot about Misty and see that very young-looking picture of her. Wasn't that taken like 20 years ago?
Of course, it is, of course.
I'm trying to age you now, Misty, so people won't feel, you know, intimidated by your youthful looks. But,
there you go, thank you.
But so beautiful website. You can read about all of Misty's upcoming workshops, and we'll talk more about them next week. So for all of our listeners, we hope that you've really felt inspired by Wendy and her words. Just don't feel like you're alone. Write to me anytime at bondk@aol.com, and we'll be happy to hook you up with my newsletters, with our support chat, or any other information or support that you need. So, Misty, I want to wish you a wonderful week.
Thank you, and you as well.
Okay, and we'll be talking to all of you next week, so have a great week and a great night.
So, love to all. Good night.
Love to all of you. Good night.
Bye-bye.